Coming up next, a power walk with a payoff.
I don't know if I can fit this in my mouth.
And then, a road trip to wine country, where my friend Vanessa and I discover a few little surprises along the way.
I feel like a giant compared to these little horses.
I don't know if I can fit this in my mouth.
That's coming up on my weekend getaway in Santa Barbara.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. My name is Phil. I'm your host. I love to cook, I love to eat, and I love to drink, and obviously I love to talk about it. So welcome back. I appreciate everybody tuning in. I've been checking the stats and seeing that it's growing with every episode, so I'm happy about that. See a lot of posts on the blog. And a lot of questions and comments and stuff, and I can't tell you enough how much I appreciate that. What I would like to know from all of you who post, if you think about it, just let me know where you're finding out about me, because I'm still kind of spreading my wings a little here, so I don't know where I'm getting my traffic. I'd like to know if it's coming from iTunes or if you're catching me from some feed burner or from another blog or from Google. I don't know. Anyway, it'd be nice to know where you're catching me from And always interested in what you're thinking. There were some comments on the blog recently about my slideshows and stuff. With every episode comes a slideshow, of course, and that's kind of like what I like to do, share some photography. And people are requesting music on the slideshow. And it's something I can't do, unfortunately. I could do it. It's possible. It's not that it's not possible. It's just that the resources that it would take to put music on, when I export these slideshows, it's done in QuickTime format, and it's a special compression, so it allows me to provide you with about a two-minute slideshow for about a megabyte. If I put some music on that, I would have to export it in a different format, and the thing would be like 40 or 50 megabytes. It would be a gigantic download, and even on YouTube, it would look horrible. So music's not an option. Of course, I would love to put music on it because I love music. And as you can tell by the intro of every show, I've got some music to share with you. So I'll look into a way to make that happen. But right now, it's just not a possibility. So I do appreciate you requesting that, however. And again, I appreciate everybody listening. Tonight, we're going to talk about New American cuisine. And what New American is it's kind of like a classic European style of cooking, but in America. So it's got an American spin on it. So we're going to talk about the Ad Hoc restaurant, which is Thomas Keller's restaurant in Yountville. And we're also going to talk about a place here in San Juan Capistrano, California, called Rendezvous, which is an example of New American cuisine. We're going to talk about Gwyneth Paltrow having her own TV cook show, and some also topics. We're going to make a dish to go along with the beer that we're going to have. It's a very small, light, appetizer style dish, and it's very nice. It's a Parmesan crisp with a goat cheese filling. And it's very, very good, and it goes along very well with the beer that we're having tonight. And I am so thirsty, I want to open this right away, and I think that's kind of why I'm just like jonesing for it. It's from one of my favorite breweries. It's called Russian River. It's in Santa Rosa, California, and I think I've mentioned him on the show before. His name is Vinny Curluzzo, and he is the head brewer. He used to work for Korbel, and Korbel in Russian River Valley. He worked for the Korbel Sparkling Wine Company, which is one of the few wineries left in California that can actually say they produce champagne, because it was before France said, you have to be from the Champagne region in order to call it champagne. But there were some vintners that owned wineries that were actually making champagne back before they, instituted that law. And they asked them to not use it, and Korbel said, no, we're going to continue using the word champagne. So they can legally say they make champagne. Anyway, Vinny worked for them, and he had a passion about beer and started making his own beer. So some of the beers that he makes, he actually ages in wine barrels that he buys from Korbel or other vintners in the Russian River region, which is near Sonoma. It's in the Sonoma County. It's one of my favorite places to be. This is one of my favorite breweries to visit, and this is one of my favorite beers to drink. It is a Belgian golden ale that is fermented in the bottle. So it's self-carbonated, and he uses a wine yeast to carbonate the beer. You can find out about Russian River and all their beers at RussianRiverBrewing.com or dial 1-888-950-BEER. And these beers are really kind of cool because, you know, in it's traditional Belgian style to name beers after the devil or angels or, you know, saints and stuff. So he sticks with that tradition and kind of makes some satanic references in the beer that he makes. So it's kind of funny, and it's a big joke to me, but I think it's kind of cool. It says on the back, damnation, the act of damning, the state of being condemned to eternal punishment in hell. Well, if this is hell, that's where I want to go. In the great beer-producing country of Belgium, there is a tradition among some brewers to name their brews something unusual. Often the name is curious, sometimes diabolical, and occasionally just plain silly. Damnation is our brewmaster's version of a Belgian-style golden ale. This handcrafted ale has an exquisite bouquet of fruit and spice with mouth-filling notes of citrus, malt, cedar, and earthy hops. So, it's kind of cool. It's a big tile bottle here, and it's got a cork in it and a little cage. I'm sure you've seen these in the beer stores before. I'm going to open it because I'm really thirsty. Hold on. Let's get this here. Open it. I don't want to poke my eye out. All right. Got the cage off. Now I'm going to get the cork. Here we go to cork. Ready? I do that every time. I don't know. It never gets old. I love that sound. Ooh, I love that smell, too. Hold on. Don't you wish you were here with me?
Hey, y'all.
I do. I wish you were here. Hold on. Let me put this bottle over here. All right. Now we can do our show. Good Lord. I was dying of thirst. I'm watching the Dodger game. My Dodgers are still in it. They're 4 games back. And the Yankees are coming on pretty strong. It's a good year for sports. Football starting. This is a great time. I just wish it wasn't so damn hot. I hope you guys are all keeping cool out there. This has just been ridiculous here in California. So let's get my nose in it. Smells Belgian. Smells familiar to me. Nice and spicy. Citrus. A little tart. It's great. It's perfect. It's a really good summer beer. It's also good in the fall. October, November. It's also really good in the early winter, like, you know, in January when it's nice and crisp and cold into February, March, and then it starts warming up. It's, you know, it's also good in the spring. Oh, I pretty much say it's good all the time. So, of course, you know, we've got things to talk about, so let's get on it. All right. Got a bunch of stories here. I got 4 of them, and I kind of a little backlogged. So let's get on it. The first one's about just a report on organic food.
You can't always tell if food is organic by looking at it, but a small sticker with a USDA label certifies it meets strict government standards. Organic foods are free of conventional pesticides and fertilizers.
Eating organic is wise on a personal level because you're reducing your intake of potentially harmful compounds.
Russian kale. Dr. Andrew Weil believes organic food is healthy, yet the USDA makes no claims that organically grown food is safer or more nutritious than non-organic products. Dr. Weil describes new research that may prove otherwise.
Organically grown fruits and vegetables experience more stress from insect predators, for example, and in response to that, they produce higher levels of these defensive compounds, which also are a benefit to us when we take them into our bodies.
You know, let me stop for a second. In regards to organic food, you know, farmers get the shaft for the most part in this country, and I think this is where they get hit the hardest. In order to become organic, and I don't know if you guys know this, or how many of you do, of course, and I've got some pretty smart people listening. In order to become organic, these farms have to apply to become certified organic farms. They pay a fee in advance. Then they're forced to produce organic food for an extended period of time before they're actually certified by the FDA as an organic farm. During this time, they can't collect any money that they would receive as an organic farm, even though they're actually producing organic produce or meats. So they're forced to refrain from bug sprays, and whatever drugs they can give their livestock, all the while they're getting jacked by predators, diseases, bugs, you name it, and they can't collect on it until the FDA, much like the Godfather, grants his blessing. You follow, you know, a trend here that it's, you know, you basically have to line someone's pockets? That sucks.
Experts say organic foods are often more expensive than their conventional counterparts because of costlier farming practices, tighter regulations, and smaller harvest. Dr. Weil suggests those on a budget learn more about which foods are likely to carry dangerous pesticide residue and opt for organic versions.
I say fuck it. You know, for the most part, most of what you're buying at the farmer's market is organic anyway, even if it doesn't say it's organic. A lot of these farmers aren't using sprays on everything. Seriously. And if they are, it's nothing you can't wash off when you bring your booty home, right? You should be doing that anyway. I hate when the government makes it harder for people to make a living. And then I take it personally when they put the screws to the farmers. A friend of mine owns an avocado grove. He doesn't spray his trees, okay? So basically he realized not long ago that he's basically selling organic avocados at the regular rate. So he's being paid the normal rate, although he's growing his stuff organically. Now he could be getting an extra 30 cents or more a pound. So he realizes, I can make more money, it's costing me in water. So he looks into applying for a certification. But when he found out what was involved and how much grease he had to put into the government's pockets, I said, forget it. You know, I don't blame him. It's just horrible. And you know, these farmers are just trying to do the right thing and just trying to make an extra dollar. And can you blame them for trying to make extra money? Because it's really hard. It's just becoming harder and harder to be a farmer. And I think that's why we're finding less and less farmers here. And we're importing more from other countries. This next report is on Real Ale, which is about beer in Britain. Real Ale is from Britain. That's where it originated.
A pub brawl is not rare in Britain, but this one is different. The small brewers of Real Ale, Stout, and Beer say they have to fight to survive. Their battle is with the big five brewers who dominate the world market.
Increasingly, consumers are fed up of global products and they're more interested in natural, local food and drink produce. And so it makes perfect sense that people should start demanding a local beer in a local pub.
You don't have to convince the 65,000 ale connoisseurs expected to put away a quarter million pints at the Great British Beer Festival. Many here take their drinking very seriously. They come to test and take notes to remember what they like. But underlying all of this is a serious concern about the survival of British ale. Many drinkers in Britain have turned to wine and spirits. Beer sales have been falling here for years, and now there's another cool drink to contend with.
This may be called the Great British Beer Festival, but all the talk these days is about this. Cider.
Fermented apple may not be everyone's choice, but cider on ice is the hot drink this year. So those supporting authentic beer have decided to support natural ciders.
Cheers.
You know, let me stop again. Sorry, keep interrupting. Not that, you know, the cider thing I can understand, because cider's been kind of popular in Britain for years. I mean, decades it's been popular. But I think the big enemy here is the mass market products. And that's what's killing Real Ale, and that's the gist of the story. If you know me, you know that mass market anything is my natural enemy. And it's especially true when it comes to beer. I'm always going to root for the underdog, whether it's in sports or food or anything else. And you can run all the statistics you like, but Budweiser is the shittiest beer that is poured in this country. And I don't care how much money you tell me it makes and how big it is and how big the company is. That has more to say for the people's taste than it does for the quality of the beer that we have here. I hate to make that kind of, you know, comparison with British beer because it's really not fair. There's no British beer that's even remotely close to the horse piss quality of Budweiser or Miller Lite, but it certainly does transcend to this report. You know, they're up against big beer giants out there, and a lot of what's independent in England are they're being pushed around by the makers of Bass, Fuller's, Boddington's, Young's, Newcastle, and all the other large breweries. So, you know, it's kind of unfair that they have to deal with that.
By reminding people how the big brewers make their cider.
Gone through a pasteurization process to knock the life out of it, and then they carbonate it with gas, and then just to add insult to injury, they pour it over ice to dilute it. We don't approve.
She may not approve, but drinkers seem to be fine with it. So the little guys want to ride that wave now.
Because if they do something, or one of the big companies does a good cider, doesn't that excite the market and help you as well?
It does excite the market, and we must make sure that our local produce, locally crafted real ales that have been the history of this country for hundreds of years, are what people choose rather than, you know, mass-produced lagers or ciders.
Bad weather also hurt British beer sales this summer, and pubs are still closing at a rate of 50 a month, says the Campaign for Real Ale. Soaring property prices make the land more valuable for housing. So why then is there so much pop here? Small brewers say the increase in the choice of natural beers and the increase in women turning to real ale are just two reasons why people here can still raise their glasses with a smile.
For those of you who don't know what real ale is, it's a type of beer that's cask conditioned. And what that means is, well, the fundamental distinction between real and other ales is that the yeast is still present in the container where it's served. And, you know, even though the yeast settles to the bottom of the container, it's not poured into the glass, but it actually helps keep the beer alive because the yeast is still alive. The process of fermentation continues in the cask or the bottle on the way to the consumer, which basically ensures that you're drinking something fresh and natural. And it's really popular in Britain. It's so popular there that there's a whole association that's devoted to it called CAMRA, C-A-M-R-A, and it's the Campaign for Real Ale. And any homebrew beer that you have that is bottle conditioned is also considered real ale. And the true enemy of really good fresh beer is the mass-produced product. And I hate to see it happen in Britain because beer has been very popular there. Okay, as usual, the news bums me out. Play the outro music, people. Okay, so on to our topic at hand, new American cuisine. I've said it before that we live in a melting pot of cultures here in our country. You know, we say we're American, but our heritage is usually, you know, something else. We're Japanese, Italian, German, French, Australian, African, Mexican, Iranian, Indian, Brazilian, Cuban. You know, you get the idea? You know, we're bursting with a lot of different cultures, which makes our country really freaking cool because it takes a lot of different cultures to make America. And I think that's what makes us the greatest nation. If, you know, the United Nations were a band, I think we'd be like the greatest hit CD. So we enter new American cuisine. New American cuisine is a term for upscale contemporary cooking in the United States. It marries flavors from America's melting pot with traditional techniques from all over the world. It includes ethnic twists on old standbys. So it's basically old world peasant dishes that are made from luxurious American ingredients, which, you know, basically means fresh. It started in the early 1980s. From fusion and California cuisines, and it featured a creative use of in-season produce and sauces. So basically, you know, what's fresh today? Can I get my hands on it? And was it picked this morning? What fish is fresh? What's in season? That's kind of, you know, how they determine how they're going to structure their menus, and that's what they're going to serve for dinner. So that's how it's done all over the world, and that's pretty much how it should be done here every day, everywhere. And that's kind of what encompasses what new American cuisine encompasses. So it's somewhat related to the French Nouveau cuisine because of the fanciness of it and the way it's presented, and it often incorporates influences from Latin America, Mediterranean, and Asian cuisines. My wife and I visited Ad Hoc in Yountville, California. It's owned by Thomas Keller, who also owns French Laundry in Bouchon. The address, the web address is www.adhocrestaurant.com, adhoc, A-D-H-O-C, restaurant.com. I recently went there, and there's not much to it. You just call. So you show up, and you don't order from the menu. So you don't say, yeah, I feel like fish. Oh, I feel like pork. You know, you don't order from the menu. Basically, whatever they have and what they've decided to serve that day is what you're going to have for dinner. And the craziest part about it was we sat down for dinner at this place, and people looked at the menu and said, where's the menu at? And the guy's like, well, this is what we're serving tonight, chef's menu. And they're like, no, I don't like what you're serving. I don't want to eat here. And then they left. I'm like, wow, first of all, that's rude, right? I just kind of thought that was rude. But they really missed out on a great meal because we had a really good meal, a really fresh, good meal, and it was an awesome experience. And again, look at the pictures in the slideshow. I've got pictures from it. We started with a fresh garden salad, all local, with a simple vinaigrette and some local green olives, because that whole Sonoma-Napa region is just loaded with great olives. It's just so much like Europe, it's crazy. Our main course came, which was braised pork loin with lentils and some steamed baby carrots and a honey mustard reduction. And then after that, they treated us to some English-style Stilton cheese, which was also made locally, some baked walnuts and pecans with fig jam, which was also, you know, made by the chef. And then dessert came, which was a berry cobbler. I asked for coffee. They brought me an entire French press full of really great French roast coffee. An excellent comfort meal. Somewhat pricey. It is, you know, it is Thomas Keller, but well worth it. And the experience itself was just fantastic. But New American itself can get really crazy. My buddy Don, who is a, kind of a regular almost at this place called Rendezvous here in San Juan Capistrano. This, I've never eaten there myself, but some of the things he's told me about have been just absolutely insane. This is a sample menu, okay, with four courses. Appetizers or starters, you can have a Spanish cured meat plate, grilled olive bread, micro arugula, shaved manchego cheese, olive oil, with 12-year-old Pedro Jimenez sherry vinegar, and then some Hudson Valley foie gras, black pepper brioche toast points, strawberry and port wine confiture, Marcona almonds. That alone, I'm floored. For your entrees, wood-fired pork tenderloin with mild mushroom and white corn porridge, a blackberry ancho and a Cabernet reduction, or chipotle-crusted pan-seared sea scallops with corn flapjacks, baby spinach, goat cheese, bacon bits, ouzo, and orange honey butter sauce, Petaluma Farms pan-seared breast of chicken, truffled mac and cheese with broccolini and country ham. It sounds extravagant, right? It is extravagant. It's fresh and delicious, and it's a new take on old food. Mac and cheese. I mean, you could make mac and cheese, then you could make mac and cheese. All right? Or they, as we call them, slants. Mac and slants. So I guess Gwyneth Paltrow is going to do a food show. She's joining Mario Batali as she tours Spain for 2 months. She's going to cook and sample the local delicacies with cameras following her. Although it's not too clear who will tune into a cookery show for Gwyneth Paltrow's tips. She's kind of weird, you know? She's famously fussy. I saw her on Oprah. My wife taped an Oprah episode, and she was on there, and she cooked something really strange. And, of course, you know, Oprah says, you know, I love it. That's nice. Oh, that tastes great. And 2 weeks later, she's like, the fuck does she make me eat? They've ranged from strictly macrobiotic to Atkins to vegetarians who eat fish diets. She still doesn't eat pork or beef, but she's willing to sample other delicacies for the show. She says, I eat all that Spanish stuff. The crazy things like eels, I love it all. What about the Iberico ham and cold meats? I'd like to see her dig into those. Say it'll give her a chance to offer America a look at Spanish cooking. Oh, that's great. I'd love for America to see, a, you know, more Spanish cooking, but maybe not with her at the helm. Mario, definitely. Yeah, do you think she only brought Mario with her? Probably because, you know, he's a decent vehicle. Otherwise, she'd be screwed. Who's going to watch her eating Spanish food? That's a car crash waiting to happen. We're never going to see it. I'm sure that's going to be in the UK only. All right, enough talk. Let's cook. We're going to have something to go really well with this Belgian golden ale from Russian River. We're going to do Parmesan crisps with a goat cheese mousse. Now, this sounds fancy, but it's really simple, easy to make. It's all in the details, really. And it's going to be a really good appetizer and something I really, you know, it's a little hearty to nosh on while you're drinking this ale. Usually when I drink Belgian golden ales or any light Belgian ale like a Saison or a Triple, I usually try to have something that's got some tartness, you know, or grittiness or meatiness to it. Something with some teeth. And this kind of has that because Parmesan is salty and goat cheese is kind of grainy. And those two things together give you a really good mouthfeel and just a little bit heavy, but not too bad. What you'll need for this is 1 cup of finely grated Parmesan cheese. And then for the goat cheese mousse, you're going to need 6 ounces of fresh goat cheese, 4 to 6 tablespoons of heavy cream, a tablespoon of minced Italian parsley, a tablespoon of minced fresh tarragon, and then some kosher salt and some ground black pepper. For the most part, these are basically Parmesan crisps that form small cups that we're going to put the goat cheese mousse in. It's best to bake them half at a time, the crisp, because they get hard really fast. And what you want to do is basically bake them flat until they start to get golden on the outside. And then we're going to have to put them in the cups. So once we take them out, we let them sit for about 30 seconds, take them off the Silpat or the nonstick baking sheet, and then stick them in either an egg carton or a shot glass. I used a shot glass to kind of push them in to make them into a tulip shape before they get too hard. So to make the crisps, you take a baking sheet, right, and you line it with a Silpat. If you don't know what a Silpat is, it's a silicone mat that you sit on your baking sheet, and it can, withstand high temperatures, and it's a non-stick mat, which is great, and it's perfect for doing things like this. If you don't have it, that's fine. You can use a non-stick baking sheet. So if you don't have that, that's fine. You can use the sheet. And then what you'll need is a ring mold or any kind of circular mold that you can make a perfect circle with. A PVC pipe works fine as long as it's about 2 to 3 inches. Place the ring on the corner of the Silpat or on your nonstick skillet and fill it with 1 tablespoon of the grated cheese. And then use your finger and spread the cheese into an even layer. Repeat that to make about 8 rounds, leaving about 1 inch between the rounds. I like to do these 4 at a time. As I said, if you do all 8 at once, you're going to be hard to once you get them out of the oven and cool them down, you're going to have to move around really fast to get them into the mold. So do 2 or 3 at a time, or 4 if you want, and then, make a total of 8. You want to bake them for about 8 minutes at 325, at least that, until, they're kind of golden on the edges. Remove it from the oven, let it cool for about 30 seconds, and then take a spatula, pull them off, one by one, remove them, and then put them into either a shot glass or the egg carton and push down to make it into a tulip shape. If you have any questions about this, look at the slideshow on the website, on the blog, and take a look at how I did it and just kind of emulate that. You can do it by hand if you want, but this just makes it easy. So after a few minutes, remove the crisps from the carton or your shot glasses and then make some more. To make the mousse, you want to place goat cheese in a food processor and process it with about 1/4 cup of the cream, and just pour that through the feed tube while it's stirring until the mixture is smooth but will hold a decent shape. So if it's too runny, you'll want to add more goat cheese. So don't add too much cream at once until you get the right consistency. Add more cream if you need it, then add the parsley and add the tarragon and add some salt and pepper to taste, and then just mix it to combine it, and then taste it and see what it tastes like. If it's right, then you're on to something, and that's it. That's as easy as it is. And then just take that out, that mousse, stir it up, get a tablespoon of that, place it into the cup. I like to put a little chive for a decoration across the top. You can either do it with spears or chop it up. That's it. It's just kind of a little mousse cup that has this creamy cheese inside of it, and what the cup is actually made of, Parmesan cheese. It's fantastic. It goes really well with the Russian River Golden Ale, the Damnation. It probably goes really well with a lot of other Belgian beers, or on its own, or with some wine. But I think it's a nice little appetizer and a good little starter for a beer party that you might want to throw. So I think that's it. I think I'm done. I want to thank you all for tuning in again to My Life as a Foodie. I hope I didn't go on too long this time. I see it's getting a little late. Thanks again for tuning in, and hope to see you again next time. And stay safe out there. Eat healthy. Eat organic if you can find it. If not, just shop at the farmer's market. Get cooking. Make sure you get some of this beer if you can't find it. RussianRiverBrewing.com. Go to your local beer store. Check them out. It's a fine brewery. They make fine beers. And Vinny is a great guy. All right, we'll see you next time. I'm not going to do that.